Hello and welcome to the Amber Spycast, your one-stop shop for all things His Dark Materials. We're still reading the Amber Spy, our namesake book, The Amber Spy Glass. And it's been a little bit, but we're ready to dive back in. We're going to do a single chapter tonight. We'll be our pandemic chapter, our pandemic period. And we're doing chapter 13. Joanna, have you maybe formulated a summary for this chapter?
I did. I tried to make it short and sweet. Let's see if it holds up. Okay. So at present, Will and Mrs. Coulter are engaged in a ruthless standoff with a gal of espions, one of whom is being held hostage by the golden monkey while the other holds a poison spur to Mrs. Coulter's neck. Will swipes at the golden monkey and knocks him off his perch, allowing the Lady Salmakia to escape. In the confusion, the Chevalier Tialis orders Will to follow him to safety, checking first to see if he still is in possession of the knife. They dart out of the cave past Mrs. Coulter, who screams and cries for her darling Lyra. Rather than follow Tialis, Will plans instead to make his way to the window he cut behind a bush, but Swiss soldiers intercept them, and Balthamos must come to Will's rescue. Unable to fight them off, Will must shoot a man in order to escape. He and Lyra jump through the window and discover that the Galavespians have followed them there. Will discreetly asks Lyra to consult the lithiometer about mending the knife, then tells her about Balthamos and his father. Lyra tells Will about her plan to find Roger in the land of the dead, and Will suggests they use the knife to rescue him. The Galavespians want to take the children back to Lord Asriel, but Will refuses, and they reach another stalemate. They offer to help Will find Yorick Bernison if the children promise to go with them later, to which Lyra eagerly agrees, though she has no intention of doing so. Night comes and Will quickly falls asleep, while Lyra, who dutifully keeps watch over him, only wishes to rest her eyes before falling into a deep sleep herself. Travis, this was short and sweet. What did you think of this?
I liked the escape, that initial escape. And then we had some exposition, which, I'm feeling a lot better about exposition these days. And because I feel like a lot of the exposition is taking place in the middle of things as opposed to just stop info dump. And I liked it. I liked it a lot.
The stalemate, which we've been sitting on for a couple of weeks, has a pretty swift resolution. Will just pistol whips the monkey, and that's pretty much it.
Which we've been waiting for $2 now, $2.50.
It's like, okay, well, have we been waiting for that moment? Mrs. Coulter sort of writhing around in pain. Of course, we find out what that pain is apparently like a little bit later in the chapter. But she's kind of delirious. And is she speaking her truth, or is it the poison that's making her call out in that way? Is she truly feeling that way about Lyra as Lyra sort of escapes into the night? How did you feel about her sort of visceral reaction to Lyra leaving her?
I don't know. I don't feel like it. I don't think she was lying. I think it was probably real, as real as she can manage.
Lyra steps over her and then removes her hand from her ankle in such a way, even while she's feeling some kind of, and is crying at one point shortly after that. Kind of intense emotions here in this scene.
There is. And I kind of agree with you, like, Travis. I think that Mrs. Coulter's reaction is sincere. But again, I it's in that twisted way of someone, you know, needing the thing that they hurt the most. I don't know how to explain it. It's in this twisted way. You know, Lyra is literally all she has now. She doesn't have her status. She doesn't have her power. She doesn't have Lord Asriel. I mean, she kind of had him, I guess, a little bit on a string here and there. And she doesn't have any of those things anymore. And Lyra, for what it was worth, was the only thing she had. So I think she was desperately traumatized to lose it, but it didn't make her like healthy for like it wasn't in a healthy way, I think. And you know, and just like kind of like in Stockholm syndrome, like Lyra feels bad. Like, oh, this is the only mother I've ever had. And I'm like, what an abusive relationship thing to say. Like, do you know what I mean? Like to feel badly for somebody who simply because of a title, she was never a mother to her. You know, she has this, not loyalty, but this, just this connection to her that she still feels somewhat responsible or sad to have caused her pain. And, you know, but Will's there. And so he trumps her.
Yeah. Yeah. Will is her emotional anchor at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's not her mother. It might not even be Pan. Was Pan even mentioned?
Certainly in the chapter he was.
Yeah, but I mean, but not as an integral.
Not in this part.
No, I wouldn't. You could, if you asked me what form he was when they were escaping, I don't think I could tell you.
Right. I mean, Pan is completely unimportant to this. This is, Will is her emotional driver.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she, Mrs. Coulter calls Lyra, I think, her only, you know, her only one or her only, and it's kind of the most, you know, she says my love and my child, but my only is just like you were saying, Joanne, it's like, that's all she's got left. And the monkey, even the monkey kind of is kind of helping her at the end, cradling her, like cuddling with her a little bit and trying to make her feel better. That's like tenderness you've never seen out of Ozymandias.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's and you know, once again, you know, thinking about the demons as integral parts of the person, that's the most tenderness she's ever shown herself that we've ever seen.
Yeah. So the poison, I guess we could talk a little bit about that poison. It knocks her out pretty good. She's
That's
pretty much
a little bit.
It's just a little bit. As we find out later, it's a scratch. She's just got a scratch of it. Mm-hmm. And it will kill you if they get a full dose in there. And they always go for like legit veins.
Right.
They're not just messing around scratching you on the cheek. They're finding like the ones that go to the heart. And I can tell you which veins those are, by the way.
Oh, no.
Now, I'm guessing there are minimal anatomical differences between them and full-size humans. The guy that's being a full-size human because, you know, they know where to go. Mm-hmm. Or someone briefed them on, you hit here, you hit here. You know.
Mm-hmm. And they're extremely quick. I thought the description, we get a little bit more of a description of what they look like and what they're wearing later in the chapter, from Lyra's perspective. And they're barefoot, which I think I'd completely forgotten. They're barefoot except for these little spurs. I feel like in my mind, they're wearing like these killer, you know, boots.
Boots.
Yeah, like killer. Like
right.
Puss in Boots boots.
Uh-huh.
But no, they're barefoot. Pretty interesting. And then I also, the dragonfly, I felt like one thing I was missing was the actual size of it. And I think it was described as a seagull size. Right. Is that right? So now I have a real kind of image about what they look like and how big they are, which I thought was pretty cool. And real descriptives here.
And that freaks me out like nobody's business.
That's huge.
Of a seagull sized dragonfly.
Huge. I would freak out if I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty scary. That's something you'd see in Jurassic Park.
Exactly.
And run from it.
Yes.
go ahead.
Oh, no, just because it seems big because aren't they only supposed to be the size of your hand?
The galvanic.
I thought they were like, weren't they the span of a person's hand? How tall?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so the dragonfly would be enormous.
It's big. Like you're riding a dragon.
A Buick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was like. It's not just like you know, kind of like with a, I don't know. Yeah. I was thinking of it must be, it's huge for them. Like a seagull compared to my hand is going to be huge.
Oh, like an albatross.
And they have saddles. They have that special saddle, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I totally just dated myself, by the way, when I was like, it's the size of a Buick. It's not like Buicks are big anymore, you know?
Does it even exist?
They were big when I was a kid.
Yeah. And they're also big, like literally a big car.
Yes. I'm such
yes.
a
big
car. My roommate in college, he had a Buick Regal, and it was a two-door. Nice. And the door on that thing was like 45 feet long. It was so big. You can get into the back seat from the front seat. You know, it was so big and so long. That was a great car. Every time you turn.
I also love that.
But yeah, I thought we talked about that before. But yeah, deja vu. I feel like we've talked about giant cars, giant wheels, giant doors. I'm just like being sucked into the past. When he turned 5 miles an hour, it would like, anyway, okay, go ahead.
Oh my God. This is enjoyable. I like it. I just love you were saying about detail, and I love the idea or the detail that they have here that even though he's this big, the size of your hand, he still had a regular sized, like a normal low voice.
Right.
A grown like, man's voice, but
yeah.
quieter because he's smaller.
Yeah.
That even though his voice was, you know, small in volume, it was deep like a man's. And I just thought that was really kind of cool. Like, cause you know, often they'll have them, they're like this big and then they're like me, 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 me. And they have that really like annoying little, which actually I love. And it's one of my favorite things. I that gets me every time. I love that little squeaky voice, but like, what must their vocal, I guess, I don't know. Wouldn't they, because their vocal cords, because they're so little, wouldn't they have to be a high voice physiologically speaking?
Well, if you're taking everything and I don't know. You're right. Does it have to, maybe it's more about, because I feel like the vocal cord is sort of this, like there's these stretched things, right? So if you just shrink that down, including what it's in, you could still have a vocal cord that could resonate in a different way. Cause you can get like ribbon speakers and they can be small, or just like how you could have a tiny subwoofer, right? That still puts out low end, but it can be quite small, just the way it moves and vibrates. I don't know. It's interesting. Maybe their vocal cords are different than ours.
Maybe. Yeah.
And they have their own, you know, their world. I guess they're all like that. Do you think their planet is also small? Or do you think the planet is still as big as the main? I don't know.
Well, they've got giant dragonflies.
Giant.
Yeah. So what if everything is giant on their planet?
Except for them. Yeah.
Like Lilliputians?
Yeah. Like, they're so small, they operate, like, on a scale underneath the really big animals.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like everything's like this big, like, these Lovecraftian monsters, you know, striding the landscape, and these little guys have established their own civilization underneath them.
Fascinating. Like Smurfs.
Like Smurfs.
Yeah. I mean, Gargamel's a full-size guy.
Yeah. Did we ever see the rest of the world in the Smurf world?
I don't think so.
Only a little bit.
They always came upon things that were big, like full size things.
Okay.
Because they like lived in like they had like mushrooms and stuff, and they dealt with like little things.
Yeah, because I wasn't sure if maybe it was the same, and Gargamel was really the mutant.
But Azrael is a full size cat.
Yeah.
Lord Azrael the cat.
Yes. And then there's also Johan.
Crossover.
Who is Johan? Are we going down the Smurfs rabbit hole?
You obviously did not watch the Smurfs.
I mean, I feel like I did, but now you just.
Yeah, there was Johan, and then he had this. I can't remember. He was like a prince or like, and he was kind of. He was a blonde haired boy, and then he had this like shorter, annoying.
Human?
Kind of LeFou. Yeah, kind of like a LeFou figure to him.
Really?
Yeah.
My mind is blown.
I mean, I think it's kind of like the gummy bears, you know? Wow. The gummy bears were also like, but they were regular sized bears? Or were they smaller?
They were regular sized bears.
Can you imagine like a 1,200 pound gummy bear? You're like, I could.
Like I still know the theme song.
Yeah.
Of gummy bears?
Bouncing here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
High adventure that's beyond compare.
You're the gummy bears.
Jeez. Astonishing.
We've been self-isolating too long.
For too long.
Wow. I mean,
LeFou has come up. Wow.
So we're making our escape here, running away. Mm-hmm. The Galavespians are like, you need to find the Africans and turn yourself into them because they're your only hope. And it's kind of like, oh, yeah. But Will's headed for his hidden window. And he calls out to Yurik, who is apparently wreaking havoc just out of visual range,
just but
is
completely stream.
Just wiping out army after army. And it must be having a great time too, because he does not come running. He's like, I'm gonna do this for a while. I'm good, you know? So they run to the little window, they dive in, they go to this other world. And the Galavespians are very swift, so they come with them. But just before they go through this window, just before they get to the window, Will is forced to do something that was hard for him. These things are hitting him hard. Not just that he's a young man, but he uses a gun and this is like not just somebody tripping over a cat. Like he pulls a trigger and kills somebody in the heart, like hits him.
Will is racking up a body count at this point.
Yeah. And it's affecting his psychology.
And I like that it is. Because, you know, typically in these in things in, you know, literature and movies and things, we often get the, oh, you know, the first one's the hardest and then after that it gets easy. But clearly it's building. The psychic toll of this is building on Will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it weighs heavily on him. Even the, you know, this first man that fell down the stairs, you know, I feel like that's still a frayed edge on his person, and he's just adding to that the more he does it. And who knows, he'll have to do more. I hope obviously that he doesn't, but he almost didn't have to, because Balthamos kind of had the opportunity to really help them in that moment, and unfortunately just couldn't quite get it done right before he had to shoot this guy.
Yeah, I feel like Balthamos is like the worst. Like he just I don't get, like, there's so much now that I think, like, I just feel like at some point Pullman just like put him on a back burner. And we don't really have like a ton more. Like, I feel like there could have been, I don't know, some kind of an arc where he can, you know, where he finds himself or he gets, you know, the strength or he's moved past. But instead, he's still in such like this grief state that he can only for short amounts of time, you know.
His will pay, get a little bit of willpower, like just for a hot second.
Yeah, to do something. Which also doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because the only reason he's even there is because he sort of like promised Baruk, but he doesn't really have, to me, I don't ever read him as having any real sort of loyalty to Will or, you know, connection to Will. He's just kind of doing it and he's just kind of there and only half helping. So when he came down, I was thinking like, oh, like maybe a redemptive moment for him. And instead he was just like, whoop. And then Will's forced to do what he has to do.
It just, it made it worse. Like it's, you know, somehow in this, he should have just not come back, because it just made it worse.
Right. Right.
Do we think he's gone, or do you think we're going to continue seeing him? Do you think he's gone for good? Or are we going to see him again?
He'll come back and be another waste of time.
Mope around.
Yeah. I wonder if that's what all the angels are like, you know?
I mean, Mopey?
The ones on this level, like the sort of middle management, not even middle management, like the lower basic, level.
Your pawn angels.
Uh-huh.
Is that what they're all like?
Like emo?
Yeah.
But, you know, even pawns, it's a great analogy, even pawns have a purpose. They're sort of like, they're the driving force of the beginning of a chess match, and can also get all the way to the other end of the board and bring back any other. They can accomplish real things. Or like people on the low levels or even the fringes of society, they're almost shoring up the rest of society. So what are the purpose of these sort of low end, weak angels? What do they do? What is their purpose?
Maybe it's an indicator of what the authority is like.
Well, I mean, we already, I feel like the way that Pullman is shaping our view, just reading this book, of what the authority is and what the authority wants, is informed by many things we've seen up to this point and the church's actions. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the world of the dead is maybe his lowest point for like what he's capable of. And the fact that we haven't even really delved too deep into that makes me think we're really going to hate this guy before this is all said and done. Which is what Pullman, yeah, maybe that's Pullman's whole mission here, but the angels are still something I just can't wrap my head around. And you know, there's angels that are super powerful.
Right.
Yeah.
Badass angels. About the most angels.
Right. Like, is there a advancement track? Like, how do you, like, do you know what I mean? Like, can you move up the ranks of an angel? Or are you always like, you know, is it literally like a cast and you're like stuck in that? Like, that's where you are.
If that's what it feels like.
Up the ranks, then, you know, Balthus is not executive material.
No, he's happy to be, yeah. Doing what are the forms that they do in
the TPS forms?
TPS forms. He's just happy doing TPS forms. we need to write up all our references from this episode because I feel like we're getting deep into the reference.
Balthus is going to burn this piece down.
So they get into the window. They go through the window into the moonlit world with the white stone. And man, Will is jacked. He like full out throws up. He is so worked up by what just happened. And that's, I think that's his humanity. You know, that's, it's good. Like he's not just a cold, unfeeling killing machine, you know, and he's not becoming that. It's not something where he's, his hard edge is all he is anymore. He's still a human being and he still has kindness and love and affection. And certainly now that he's reunited with Lyra, it's kind of nice to see that again. Lyra really shows how much she cares about him.
Which is fantastic. I really
she asks about his wound, his hand, right away.
Yep.
She's like, oh, is it still bleeding? Is it better? You know, she's really concerned about him, and she helps dress his new wound on his hand from whacking the monkey. It's not even that late.
I believe I wrote shock the monkey in the notes, but you can.
I think you did. You did.
I think I did. I like yours better, though.
You should have wrote shock the monkey.
The thing is, that's not even a euphemism. Like, that's not even an accepted euphemism.
No.
But it is.
Yeah. It works. Right. It works. Tonight it works.
It works.
Beautiful. The knife is still broken, right?
Yep.
Well, I was thinking he was going to go into this world and then close the window, like, absentmindedly and be really stuck. But luckily he didn't.
Yeah.
But he's really making sure the Galavespians don't know that it's broken because they seem to know that he has the upper hand because of the knife. And kind of sneakily mentions that to Lyra that they need to keep that secret. But luckily the alethiometer has been reunited with Lyra, and man, I just love that Lyra's voice is back in this and her accent and her delivery and just her energy is back in the story. Cause I think she's really infused this with a little pep again.
Yeah, I mean, Lyra is the key to this whole thing. She's got to be in the story. It loses something without her.
She reads the alethiometer, and very quickly, it's almost easier now. Did you notice that she, like, did the hands on it, and she knew before it was done?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lyra, and then when you compare her to the rest of the people who, you know, are just like take weeks to translate, she's got a connection to that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning she's got a connection to the dust somehow.
Mm-hmm. It's like she could almost channel that without the device. Like there's something that I feel like she's, mm-hmm. if she really wanted to, or she thought that she could actually do it. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So she looks up to see whether, you know, how to fix it. And of course, as we all predicted, a key ingredient to be this thing being fixed is our bear Yorick. Mm-hmm. And luckily he studied the hell out of that thing. But is he still fighting on the other side? I don't know. How are they going to go get him?
Yeah. I just love that their first thought is to go for Yorick. They know. Mm-hmm. You know Yorick is always the key.
Yeah, he's important.
Panzerbjorn,
man. Lyra is...
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I have a question. Do you think that her ability, that Lyra's ability, number one, I think, like you said, her voice was back and her energy was back. And I really feel like it's connected to the fact that she was like asleep for so long and like was like well rested. And so she kind of comes out like, you know, she's all like spring and she's like, what, you know, Will, your arm. And oh my goodness. Which, you know, changes towards the end of the chapter. But I love that because that's what it felt like to me. Just felt like somebody who was like, you know, had like waiting and then could just like kind of let go. But I wonder if her being in that trance-like state, if that affected her ability to read the alethiometer. Like, did it make her, like, did it open her up to deeper things? If she was able to connect to a land like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seems like not everybody is able to probably talk to people from the land of the dead. And I know she's special, but that feels like it must have, you know, maybe it opened up or awoken a different part of her that makes it easier now even to read it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think?
Being in the land of the dead, you know, opened her up. Maybe that connection to the dead that she had for how long was she out?
Days. Yeah, I mean, a while. There's quite a bit of travel takes place while she's asleep.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, you know, she is pretty sharp when she comes out of this trance, but she ends up being tired. You know, she's actually surprised that she's tired. Her mind must have really been engaged in what was going on. But her body was asleep. So there's a combination here where she's mentally taxed, but her body was refreshed because she'd been asleep the whole time. You know, and she seems to have been well fed. You know, there's lots of things here where like, she seems pretty much ready to go. I feel like she would really had to go to the bathroom. I don't know.
Right.
Mrs. Calder didn't let her go. Right. She put her right back to sleep.
Yeah.
Was she even eating?
Well,
I mean, could she have?
She could add nutrients into the broth or whatever she was feeding her. But
if it's
just liquid, all she would have to do is pee.
Yeah.
My 44-year-old self is just like, oh.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So there's a lot of, it's a little more, this isn't so much exposition because it's more of a two-paragraph info dump. Of her telling Will and Will telling her everything that's happened in very, very brief little snippets. And they leave out a lot of details, which is good. You know, it's just like, here's sort of what happened. And he's like, here's sort of what happened. And they move on. But, you know, you get to find out that he met Yorick and they came for her. And she sort of talks about the land of the dead and that a little bit about Roger and how she failed him. And she couldn't really say sorry to him. And they hatch a plan to get into the world of the dead, which she asks the alethiometer about as well, using it liberally, which I'm very happy about, for the first time, it feels. And they're going to maybe try to get the knife fixed and then cut their way into the land of the dead?
Yeah, because they think that they can rescue him because... there's a third part that there's a third part,
the soul,
to the way that humans and demons, yeah, to the soul. And you know, I remember us talking about this in the very, very first book in Golden Compass, when they're down in the catacombs, and, you know, about the ghosts and it sort of being like the Trinity, you know, kind of like Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you know, human, demon, and I don't know, Holy Ghost or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so I don't know. I think that's I think it's a really interesting, it's a really interesting take on it. But the idea that it's a real place and that Will can like cut a way into it is also very fascinating to me. Just because, you know, in any kind of a religion, those things are always so they're like an abstract, like a somewhere else kind of not tangible from this world, but it is. It is because of the night self.
Yeah, it's like a plane that's mm-hmm. also on like a planet of some kind. Like there's a surface and it's reachable. Not really at the core of the earth or something. It's like on the surface of a planet of some kind. That he can cut his way through, which could be kind of intense when it finally happens.
Yeah.
We get to find a little bit more about the Galavispians. This is where we see a little bit more about what they look like and what they are like, what they sound like, and who they're sided with, like why they're helping. And they say they're working with Lord Asriel, which has very little reaction from Lyra, which surprised me a little bit. But one of the pieces of information here is we're taking you back to Lord Asriel. We're going to take you to him. And Will's like, how do you think you're going to take us? You're so little. You know, how are you going to take us? You know, what do you say? You know? And then sure enough, we get another stalemate here, which this one's pretty hilarious, where Pan gets grabbed, which is, of course, a no-no. And there's a moment where it's like, you know, you're upset for Lyra. But Will just grabs onto the other one with her feet and just holds him out like this. Boop. Oh, you want to do this again? I'll just like bang his head against a rock.
Yes. Yes. And that's the thing. And that I guess where we go back to what I was saying earlier and kind of proves that a little wrong, whereas it may hurt Will, you know, to have to show violence, but it's gotten easier.
He's capable.
He may hate that it's gotten easier. But it's got music.
Yeah. And they see, and the Galavispians see that in him. Mm-hmm. They know he's got it and he can do it. It's not just the knife at this moment either. This is like him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and he also knows that they are not the Galavispians' top priority.
Right.
Before Tialis even offered to help Will out, he was like, do you have the knife? Like, he asked him, do you have the knife first? And then was like, oh, great, come with us. Mm-hmm. And it makes me question, like, would they have even if it was for Lord Asriel, if they didn't have the knife, would they even have actually helped them after that? They have taken him? You know what I mean? Like, would they have taken him, or would it have been one of those things that in their minds, it's like, this isn't really worth it. It's not like this, you know, our mission isn't right. And so I think Will already knows that. He knows that, like, what's important to them is more important than who they are. And so when he grabs the little guy, he grabs him by his feet, you know.
Yeah. Just being careful not to get the little spurs on his hand.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Will's entire value to them is the knife wielder. I mean, they would probably get Lyra, but Will's entire value is whether or not he can wield that knife.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if they found out that the knife was broken, why would they need him either? Like, it's the them in concert, you know, the wielder and the knife. That's it. They go together. So the standoff ends because they sort of talk themselves down off the ledge. And they agree to go with them, but they're lying because they're not really going to go with them. I just feel like all of this, I think Lyra and Will are confident that they can ditch them, but something tells me these little guys are not very easy to ditch.
Yeah, they've been around the block.
Yeah, they've been around. Like, they may even pretend like they've been ditched and just follow them. You know, it doesn't seem like they're going to be like, oh, let's go behind this bush. And then that's, what are they going to do? And also he doesn't have the knife. So they're going to have to see it being, there's no way for them to hide that Yurik is going to be fixing this thing. They're just not going to be able to. I'm looking forward to that scene too, with Yurik fixing the knife. And you know he's going to do it, right? Oh,
God.
100%. There's no way. This is like the worst kept secret in fiction, is that he's going to fix it.
Yeah, Yurik somehow gets the knife and says, oh, I got nothing. I will be shocked.
He's like, I'm sorry. I can't do this.
Yeah, Yurik's going to be all, yeah, get my hands on that blade.
Oh, yeah, he's going to like that.
Here's what I love about this part, just very quickly. This is what I love about this part, and then I'll be quiet. I love that we get to see Lyra back in all her, like, mentirosa, like, she was just, like, straight up just lied, like, she happily lied, like, was laughing when Lady Salmakia was like, and you'll come with us, and she was like, yes, of course, and it was just like that old Lyra, you know, from, like, the streets of London and from the streets of Oxford that just, you know, lying was like she was speaking the truth, like she didn't even, you know, and it was, I just loved it. But the joy that she had doing that was like, that's what made me, I know that you and I differ, like I'm okay with her being back, and I know that the last session I was just kind of like meh, but that was when I was happy to have her voice back, when she just had zero qualms about being like, yep. And I was like, yeah, there we go. That I do like.
Yeah, that's good. It was good. And boy, yeah, she really did enjoy that. You put in here, you said, Lyra is super proud of herself.
she's just like, I so lied to you. It's just funny.
So good. You know, Will falls asleep. He's tired. I think he's comfortable with Lyra being there. You know, time to rest. They got big things coming up. My eyes expect. Mm-hmm. I wonder what's next. I guess we'll find out in chapter 14.
We will.
I guess so.
Well, I hope you guys are doing well out there in the world. We're the three of us are under quarantine, right?
Yes.
Yep. And hopefully everyone that's listening is also under quarantine, whether voluntary or mandated. And everybody be safe out there. We'll get through this. We spoke before we recorded about this too shall pass. We don't know what's going to be on the other side, but hope it's something that we recognize.
Quick suggestion for all of our listeners. There is a new show on Netflix starring Amir Wilson.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Will,
yeah.
In the HBO series. Called The Letter for the King. It's a TVPG, so it's relatively family friendly. And, you know, well, I'm hoping it's relatively family friendly because I'm going to watch it with my family.
Yeah, I've heard it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys should check it out.
Yeah, it's added to my queue. I can't wait to see it.
Cool.
Yep. And Westworld's back, and Picard, the finale of Picard is tonight or today.
I watched it this morning.
Is it satisfying? Yeah, okay, good. I'm very excited.
I can't wait for
season two.
Oh,
we all know.
Oh, we know there's a season two.
Yeah, we know there's a season two. And we all can't wait for it, even though I haven't even watched the finale yet. CBS All Access is free for a month, Joanna, right now.
Right. Yes. Well, and I got to watch the first episode yesterday.
Oh, good.
And my heart just squeed the whole time. And then I was watching it with my 9-year-old and you know, he was just like, didn't understand some things and who people were. And I was like, oh, son, let us watch TNG. You'll know who all these people are.
I don't know if
are.
I ever told you this, but I was watching Next Generation and like Lyra came out of bed and was like, I'm thirsty, or we had one of these kid things, you know. And I paused it and it was just Jean-Luc on the screen, just him. I don't know what was going on in the episode, but it was like from one of the original TNG episodes. And she kind of came in and said her piece and looked up at the screen and was like, who's that? And just without even a single thought passing through my head, it just came right at my mouth. I said, that's Jean-Luc Picard. he's like a second father to me. I meant it. he raised me, you know, just a tick underneath my own father. Yep.
Well, and then Jack today was watching Weird Al's White and Nerdy, and he finally understood who, because it says that one line in White and Nerdy, right? It's do I like Kirk or do I like Picard? And he finally like understood. And he was like so proud. He was so proud of himself for making that connection.
I have a friend who's so hardcore Kirk, like it's Kirk and nobody for him. Pretty much, he's a original series. He never got a Next Generation. He's watching and loving Picard, and like thinking that he didn't get TNG, and he wants to like go. But he's fully Picarded. Like he is, like holy moly, how did I miss this? This is amazing. He's, oh my God, this is such an interesting take on the character that I had no interest in back then.
Well, this is the
different
story Kirk fans deserve too.
And they did deserve it. He didn't deserve, spoilers, he didn't deserve to die underneath a falling, you know, metal, you know, that was the lamest. He should have been on a starship, saving the galaxy or saving the universe.
My dream is always to have him on that other, the star drive section of the Enterprise when that exploded. That's where he should have been up in space.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we'll discuss more next week. I appreciate everybody listening. Guys?
Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Yeah. See you later.
Be well. Be healthy.
Be safe.